This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. Are you thinking about starting a new website?
Or do you have a new small business idea? Or you want to sell something online?
Well, GoDaddy's offering OneNew or Transfer.com for just $1.99 for the first year.
Each new .com comes with a free instant page website. What are you waiting for? Get your website started today.
Go to GoDaddy.com and enter the code STORY at checkout or click on the GoDaddy banner on our website.
And you will be supporting this podcast.
All right, this is Woody Allen, and you're listening to, you're listening to Storyworthy. And I'll tell you something, I don't feel worthy, but the story is marvelous.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Greyhound bus station in North Platte, Nebraska.
Oh my gosh. Why would we be at a Greyhound bus station?
Because our topic tonight brought to us, in English, by our guest is driving across America.
But that's not taking the bus,
I drove across America with my ex that I moved to California with twice. We drove in a car from Milwaukee to Los Angeles, took a Greyhound bus back to pick up the rest of our stuff, put it in a Ryder truck, and then drive across America again.
Did you hear of the airplane? Have you heard of this?
We could not afford the airplane. We rode a Greyhound. This is the longest I'd ever been on a Greyhound. It was fucking horrifying. And the reason the North Platte, Nebraska is somewhere around 4 a.m, the bus stopped at a diner in North Platte, Nebraska. And everybody was like, well, I'm asleep, but I want to get off this fucking bus and I got to eat and I could die at any moment. So everybody piled off the fucking bus in just freezing cold weather in North Platte. It couldn't be any worse. Got some terrible egg sandwich and got back on the bus. And
why
I was convinced.
Why did you choose the egg sandwich?
It was that or the hooves. They had hooves. And they did have them sautéed or smoked, because it's North Platte, or they had an egg sandwich. But my ex, Susan, she was the kind of woman who would go into a bathroom of any kind and be there for hours. Mm. She's in a bathroom, and I was convinced that the bus was going to leave, and she was still going to be in the bathroom.
What
does
she do in the bathroom?
I don't know. It's some sort of magical woman's wonderland.
No, but I'm a woman. I know these things. What is she doing?
I don't know. She was spending a lot of time on her eyebrows. Imagine how horrible the bathroom was. Didn't matter. She was in there. I was like knocking on the door, like, would you come out here? They're going to leave the fucker. We're going to be stranded in North Platte, Nebraska. It's been
a horror. So you get back on the bus and you continue on.
We continue on. We actually arrived in Milwaukee on Thanksgiving Day at like 4 p.m, and we were supposed to go with her mom to Thanksgiving. We went, fuck this. We ain't going nowhere. And her mother left. I remember watching the Cosby Show, Thanksgiving special, and eating a lean cuisine and being like perfectly happy I wasn't on the bus anymore. Anyhow,
the whole thing is very strange. I would think her mother would be really pissed if you're coming for Thanksgiving and then you blow them off at the end for a lean cuisine.
That sounds, you know what's funny is her mother was pissed all the time about everything. And in this particular case, we must have had that look about us like, I just spent 36 hours in a Greyhound bus. And she was not pissed. It was quite surprising.
Do you remember the Greyhound bus? They used to have that slogan, leave the driving to us, as if they were going to say, you know, Hannes Finney, right, your turn to drive.
Leave the driving to us, but leave the rape to the other passengers. That was what they, because
okay,
it was
okay.
Just so bottles rolling around. It was horrifying.
I hear what you're saying, crossing. I think what you're thinking about is how you cross the country.
Driving. Turned out driving was a dream compared to the Greyhound
right,
bus.
Okay, so our guest tonight, Ed Krasnick.
Ed Krasnick.
Writer, comedian.
And driver.
Producer and driver. He comes forth with the topic, driving across America. And I think it's a, gosh, I can't even believe we haven't covered it before. Because who
It
who
is
hasn't
an epic story. Everyone has driven. Yeah, it's
now,
true.
Now, you take a bus from L.A. to Milwaukee. I guess that's across the country.
No. But, well, it's about two-thirds of the way across the country.
Because I'm coming from Pittsburgh, and I've crossed the country about six or
when
eight
I
times.
When I met you, you kept saying, I'm from back east. And I would say, oh, where are you from? She'd go, Pittsburgh. I'm like, that's not east. Philadelphia is east.
It's easter than easter than. I don't think it's, Easter is a word.
No, it's more it's east, more than, east Milwaukee, than Milwaukee, but it's still the Midwest.
The point is this: I've crossed the country many times, and it's exhausting, is what it is. I'd much rather fly.
Well, the first time, yeah, you drive. No, and you're like, oh, this is fantastic.
But when you move to LA, most people do drive here because you got to have your car, you have to have your luggage, and I have a quick story about me driving across America. But before I bring that up, I do want to mention, folks, if you want to support Storyworthy. And of course you do.
Of course you do.
Then you head on over to storyworthypodcast.com when you shop on Amazon. Because if you do that, you click on
the Amazon banner,
then
shop normally for your picture books of Greyhound stations across the nation.
We are being supported. And that's important. So, folks, again, go to storyworthypodcast.com, click through our banner ad, and you keep the train rolling.
And you know what else is happening that's cool?
What?
Is in October 4th, 5th, and 6th, we will be an official selection of the LA Pod Fest.
Oh, I forgot that.
It is going to be in Santa Monica.
Right.
Thank God.
Right.
Because if it was in Azusa, I wouldn't go.
Not so much.
Going to be in Santa Monica. So if you want information about us and the other podcasts, go to lapodfest.com. That's lapodfest.com.
You know, I moved here to Los Angeles in August of 1997, and I drove from my hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in my black Toyota Celica. Now, I had a buddy with me at the time, Ellis Diaz, and he offered to help me drive across the country because, and this is where they get you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd only been out of chemotherapy for 6 weeks. That's right. I had cancer.
Yeah.
I was very, very sick for many, many months. And then I said to myself, well, looks like I'm going to die sooner or later. I may as well go to Los Angeles and try to be an actress. Okay. So anyway, Ellis says he'll come with me. He was a flight attendant with me. I had a past career as a flight attendant.
Okay.
So Ellis says, I'll drive across the country with you. I can take you to Denver. I'll drive with you to Denver. So we're driving from Pittsburgh to Denver. I'm going to drop him at DIA. He's going to fly back. Then I'm going to continue on.
I'm sorry, DIA, is that Denver International Airport?
Exactly.
Did you actually just drop the airport?
I dropped him off. I did.
Like we're all just sitting around going, oh, DIA, yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay. When you're a flight attendant, Hannes, city codes become very important.
Yes.
By the way, DIA, also some folks call it the Dead Indian Airport because they say that perhaps it was built on an Indian burial ground. Moving forward, Ellis Diaz. So here's my buddy. He says I'll come with you. I'll help you out. Now, when you drive across the country, you may or may not know. You do because you were on the bus.
But I also drove across.
You get to know the person you're with. That's my point.
Yes, that's true.
Because you talk a whole lot. Now, Ellis Diaz, he mostly talked about his upcoming marriage to a Russian woman that he met after visiting Moscow on a 100-woman weekend tour.
Let me tell you kids today. Now, today you just go on a website and you meet a Russian woman. In the old days of 1990, the 20th century, you had to physically go to Russia.
And he was going then. He had picked out a girl. He's going to go to Russia, then pick her up. And then bring her back as his wife. She spoke no English. Anyway, the point is, it was an entertaining conversation to say the least. Now, the plan again, like I said, he's going to drive to DIA in Denver. Then he flies back to Pittsburgh. I spend a couple days in Colorado visiting friends.
Mm-hmm.
Then I drive to Vegas to meet a friend, okay?
Mm-hmm.
An old boyfriend. There, I said it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to help me finish driving to LA. But this is where it gets tricky. The boyfriend, the ex-boyfriend, Scott. I'll say his name. What do I care?
Wow.
He gets us a room. He gets us a room at the MGM Hotel, which at the time it was like one of the newest hotels in Vegas, and it was like $300 a night, and there was like this Wizard of Oz theme, and it was a big fucking deal. It was like MGM Mirage. That's it.
Yeah.
It was before Paris, okay, anyway. So he says he's gonna treat me to this hotel room, okay, because he knows I'm coming out of chemo, I got no hair. But I told him, I said, look, no sex. I'm not getting back together with you. We're not going to make out. We're not getting back together. And he says, no worries. No worries. I just want to be a friend. I want to help you cross the country, settle into LA. He's from LA. After your long illness, I'll help you. So to make a long story short, once I get there, Scott thinks that I'm going to change my mind. Of course he thinks that. He thinks this is our big romantic reunion. And when I refuse his advances, we end up in a huge fight in which he ends up saying, I am leaving now. Take me back to the airport. And I say, fuck you. Take a cab to the airport.
Yeah.
So he does. And he leaves. Now, that night, this is where the story, we're continuing west. We're heading to LA.
Yes. Slowly.
I'm in Las Vegas. I'm sucking down this huge margarita from Excalibur. I think it was like $15. I don't know. Then I get back to the hotel room.
But it had an actual sword, an Excalibur sword in it. That's how big it was. It had
a three-foot sword in the hotel. Right. Fair enough. Okay. Now, when I wake up, I realize that I got to get the hell out of this hotel by noon because I'm going to be charged for another night. I even called the desk and I said, can I have an extension? They said, no, you got to be out. 15 minutes. It was 11:45. 15 minutes. Get the hell out of there. So I go to the bathroom. I pop 3 aspirin as quick as I can for my headache, screaming hangover headache. But then right after I swallow the pills, I stop and I look in the mirror and I think to myself, did I just take aspirin or Valium? I had taken 3 Valium. And now when I realize this, I realize also that the clock is ticking and I got to get the fuck out of this hotel. But where am I going to go? Because I'm going to pass out in 20 minutes. And personally, I'm really, really sensitive to medication. If I take a half a Valium, I'm passed out. And I just took 3. And the hotel is $300 a night. Okay, remember, I'm also moving across the country. So I have a ton of shit with me, including my guitar, my bike that I have to put back up on top of the car. So I get a cart from the valet. I gather my stuff as quickly as possible. I head down to the South Park at the MGM where I parked my car. I pack it up and I start heading out of town. How far do I get, Hannes?
2 feet.
I get about 3 miles outside of Vegas, and I start feeling it, man. And I pull over on Interstate 5, and I fall asleep in the car, right in the driver's seat, and I pass out. I wake up. It's dark. It's midnight. I had just slept like 11 hours on the side of the road. But you know what? I found a 7-Eleven. I drank some coffee, and I continue on to Los Angeles.
Woo! Oh, wait, okay, here's my question. The first question. Okay, so were your windows open?
Because I remember cracking the windows a bit, but it was bad, man. I knew I was in for it.
You could have been attacked and not even known it.
Would have been exciting. I mean, that was the night before with the creepy guy.
No, I know, but I'm saying.
I had sent all these boxes ahead to LA because he said, hey, man, you can send me your shit.
Yeah.
And I'll accept it, UPS or whatever it was at the time. And you know, so you can forward stuff ahead. And I did that. So now we have this blow up in Vegas. And I got to come to L.A. and call him and say, I got to get my shit.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Horrible.
See, now, kids, I'm going to explain. We didn't have transporters in the old days where you could just magically transport. Never mind. Star Trek joke. You were not accosted in any way. You were not even like the police going, there appears to be a body.
No.
Where were you parked?
Right off the freeway, right off the I-15.
No, but I mean, you were literally.
I just pulled off the side of the road and I slept.
You're on the side of the road.
That's exactly right.
Not even like at a rest stop.
No.
That's amazing that no one even saw that. You could have been there for days.
I could have been there for days. Nobody cares, Hannes. Nobody cares.
I know that nobody cares, believe me.
I will say this. When people cross the country, they usually take like the 40, that's the low one down by Arizona.
10.
Yeah, like that kind of through Phoenix and Texas, right? Or the 70 straight through Colorado. Yeah. That's where I was on the 70. And or the 80. That's the further, the northern route.
See, we took the 40 and then in the middle of Arizona went down to the 10.
Oh, went all the way to the 10. Interesting.
Actually, it's exciting. I got a boner just from this conversation. No, actually, we were driving a Ryder truck on our second trip across the country. So it's like within 3 weeks of having driven across and going, wow, New Mexico looks like Mars. This is amazing. Within 3 weeks, you're doing the same thing. You're like, this is a fucking nightmare. I should burn this shithole to the ground. Whoa. But we're in a Ryder truck and the tail light goes out. A cop pulls us over and he gives us a fix-it ticket.
Oh, right. Fix the light.
It says Ryder on the side. It's obviously not. Right. My truck.
You're not going to fix it.
It's a Sunday. He's like, if you don't fix it. So we fucking called the 800 number. Now, kids, an 800 number was a way to get in touch with. It's like Sunday in the middle of fucking Arizona. We call an 800. They tell us a place to go, which requires us driving south in the middle of Arizona to some guy who shows up, fixes it. It was completely insane. And then we were closer to the 10 and came across. It was like, you fucking... It says Ryder. I couldn't even believe
those trucks. I just think about a Ryder truck, like that big open cab, and you have a like seatbelt on, and you're not safe at all. Frankly, you're not.
No,
safe.
I'm sure that you're not remotely safe. No,
you're not safe, and or dragging those U-Hauls behind you, you're not safe there.
And you got to go up and over mountains coming into L.A.
Ladies and gentlemen, I recommend if you move to L.A., sell everything first, and just buy it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, don't bring your shit. This is important advice.
All right, you guys, we got a real storyteller here. Thank God. And he's coming up right now. So wherever you are, stay tuned because Ed Krasnick is on his way.
Here comes his Greyhound.
Hi, this is Amber Tozer, and I'm tweeting right now, but please listen to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We have proceeded now to our destination, the Greyhound Station in downtown Milwaukee. The most depressing place on earth.
I believe that, man.
Nothing about this place has changed since I was 10 years old.
It's just despondent, sadness.
Well, it's like a poverty. Little like preserved in amber. It's like the same vending machines and the same the chairs with the little TV on it that you can put a quarter into. Remember
what
that?
What city are we in?
Milwaukee.
See,
you never saw the TV?
Yeah, I do. But this is the first negative thing you've ever said about that little jewel of the Midwest.
Well, it is obviously the Paris of Lake Michigan. But but Greyhound stations exist in their own universe bubble.
Yeah.
Like when you leave the Greyhound station and walk into downtown Milwaukee, you'd be like, oh, well, what a nice restaurant.
Right, have a
but
coffee.
Inside the station,
right.
It's like time
not
has not
out.
Moved on from 1956.
There's like a cigarette machine where you pull the thing and
yeah,
it jerks
yeah, it's
it
got
over.
The ice cream sandwiches that go in the elevator. Remember frozen elevator
sure.
would come up? And then, like I said, the TV, which was the best thing, where you put a quarter in.
And you watch TV for just a short period
right.
of time.
But when I was a kid, I was like, you can watch TV outside your house in public? This
right.
is amazing.
I remember the first person I knew that had a cell phone, and I said to myself, you're telling me that you could talk to anybody you want on the way home from work. You know what I mean? Like, you just call, you're talking into the air, and then,
yeah.
you know? And I think to myself, I would never run out of things to say.
Yeah, turned out you were wrong about that.
In fact, I have. Ladies and gentlemen, Ed Krasnick's here right now. He is an Emmy-winning writer and a creator, also a performer, a producer, and a development executive who created self-help comedy. Now, his acting credits are immense with shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Sopranos, Just Shoot Me, Ellen, Dr. Katz, Conan, Whose Line Is It Anyway? I could go on and on. Recently, Ed was the writer, show producer on After Lately with Chelsea Handler. And currently, he's launching a production company specializing in self-help entertainment media. Hannes, listen to the four words.
Self-help.
Self-help.
Entertainment.
Entertainment media.
Media.
He sounds busy. That's what he
sounds. Very busy. He's so busy that he was late coming here, but that's okay. We're glad he's here.
I am glad he's here. And folks, if you would like to find Ed Krasnick, you can find him at edkrasnick.com or follow him on Twitter at Ed Krasnick. Wherever you are, folks, put your hands together for Ed Krasnick.
Yeah, I can't believe that buildup. I'll never be able to follow it. I'm wearing a caftan. I am the Hebrew Barry White. Right now. There is no question about that. I'm wearing sandals. I'm gaining weight. I'm doing Dysfunctional Family on Ice. I have pain. I bring the pain. I can bring it. I don't know where to put it, but I can bring it. And I'm very excited to be here. Those stories, you know, you forget about traveling, but I'll tell you something. Those are amazing stories. Your mind, the state that you're in, not the physical state, but the emotional state, is very open, and it's very like, I don't know what's going to happen. And it's so different than how you live when you become older, mm-hmm. or, as me, as I am, ancient. I mean, I could stand next to the Parthenon, it looks like a new building. I'm an old person. I'm not young. I could go out with Miss Jane Pittman, they'd say, isn't it nice to meet your grandfather? I'm not a young man. At any rate, and I have, my references will not be from this century.
Yes, yes.
There's nothing that I will ever say. I'll do 12 Angry Men. I'll do Willie Loman. I'm going to do everything that nobody knows. You know why? Because nobody knows me. At any rate, so here I am. Yeah, and you say the podcast festival? I'd love to go to the podcast. I've had a podcast for 500 years. I'm not going to the podcast festival. You know why? I don't know where it is. But no, I know everybody. It's so funny because I do know everybody and I grew up with it. Now I'm meeting you guys and this is a pleasure. And I'm actually sitting in a bus seat, which is amazing because I can't tell a story unless I have the physical prop, which is very difficult because how are you going to tell a story? It's like telling a story about the electric chair. I have to be sitting in an electric chair. Otherwise, who's going to believe me? Anyway, so I... But I thought it was very interesting, your story, Christine, because she buries the lead about cancer. She just throws it aside. She talks, hey, I had cancer, and I was, and then I was in a Chevy Vega. And then you go on.
The listeners of this podcast.
Right. Oh, they know it already?
I think.
You say it every day?
Right. Believe me.
No, it's an amazing thing. I mean, hopefully we don't, but obviously nothing is going to keep you down because you have such tremendous energy, tremendous life force. And you are just not now. You're in a Greyhound bus station in your mind. There's no question about that. And I have that image. I used to, you know, I went to school in Syracuse University, and I was very panicked about school. I couldn't really adjust to it. So I was constantly taking the Greyhound bus home from Syracuse to Boston. And I remember sitting in that station, I would put a quarter in, and then there'd be Andy Griffith. And you could sit with Andy Griffith and says, I don't even want to go anywhere. I don't have a home. I don't belong. I don't know who I am, but I know who Andy Griffith is. And that is the story of America. People don't know who they are, but they know who's on television. And that's what's great about America. It's a comforting feeling. Did I mention that I can't fit into my own pants anymore? Did I mention that?
No.
Because I've gained so much. I've been eating like Aunt Jemima. I can't even... I'm Aunt Jumima. I can't even describe what's going on right now. I'm wearing a Hebrew hip-hop pajama top. Does that mean anything? All right, but you talk about... I just karate chopped a styrofoam cup. Oh, man, I have so much anger. But also a lot of love and a lot of confusion. So you're in good shape. Let's go down the highway together, shall we? Well, I tell you, I come from Boston, and Boston, as you know, is a very racially tense area. It's an amazing city, has a lot of strength to it, as we recently learned through the news, but also incredibly racially tense. And Nelson Mandela was touring the country when I was like 18 years old. And my next-door neighbor, Mrs. Lane, I decided to ask her, I said, Nelson Mandela, this is amazing, isn't it? Oh, for Christ's sake, say it when I'm tired of him. Huh? Mandela this, Mandela that. Don't I have problems of my own? Edward, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I said, Mrs. Lane, he spent half his life in prison. Edward, look around you. This is my prison. When do I get out? Hey, where's my pardon? So that's where I come from. So we're coming from there. Now you're 18 years old. I'm training as an environmental education teacher at Boston University. I've never been camping. I don't know why I would train as an and I was trained as a museum exhibit planner. I don't know why I would do this. Now, I'm about to go cross country. My parents they're worried about it. They actually woke up for this. My parents were in that house. The drapes were drawn. There was a no living room. There was a decaf coffee table. There was no living. As long as you weren't living, everything was good. So now I'm going from that place, and I'm going to go to California, really to get some geographic distance from my family. You want to put, if you could put Japan in between you, you would do it, but you can't. So now I'm going to get some geographic distance. I'm heading out on the road. I'm like 19 years old now. And I do a driveway car from Cambridge, Massachusetts to Salem, Oregon. Driveway car is you have to drive somebody's car who doesn't feel like driving it because they have a brain.
Yeah.
They don't feel like driving at 3,000 miles, so now you will do the driving for them, and it gets you cross-country. All right, that's great. I've got two people who are friends I can only describe them as hippies. The man had a beard, the woman had a beard, everybody had sandals, everybody looked like Jesus, they were in the car. So they John and Jennifer, now I remember their names, and we got a Ford Pinto with an exploding rear end. That's the car that we drove cross country. Now, I have never driven a stick before, and I've never been camping before.
Yeah.
And the way I practice my camping, because we were going to camp across the country, is that I had a dome tent, which I put together in my parents' living room. And I would sit in the tent for 2 weeks. And I sat there, and I read Catcher in the Rye in the dome tent with Andy Griffith on in the background. Because why make it easy when you can make it hard? That's the crazy way. So I sat there, and I would practice. Now, I don't know. The practice was I'd lay in the tent for like 20 minutes, and that would be it. Okay, so now remember that, because that's going to be important later. So now we head off, and my father, who was not an emotional, emotional guy, called one of my friends and said, I'm really worried about Ed. I love him so much. I don't want him to leave. And you would think that would deter me. It did not deter me. I got in the car and away we went. So we're driving, and my friends are driving. And then all of a sudden, they just conk out and go in the back seat, and they're gone for 17,000 miles. And now the guy who doesn't camp and doesn't drive the stick has got to drive the stick cross country and camp across country. And I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Now, I don't know what happened in between Boston and Colorado. I really blanked out. But all that I know is I would wake them up like every time I'd have to come off of the highway because they had to talk me down with the shifting. And I'd be, and I'm driving, and they'd wake up and they'd say, okay, fourth, third, you're in third. Good, you're in third. You're in second. Go back to third. You know, so this was what they were doing. Then they go back to sleep. They were like narcoleptics on a freeway. They would go, how long was I out? 1,700 miles. All right, so now we're in Colorado and we're going to camp. We're going to camp in Idaho Springs. You know it. Now, Idaho Springs in Colorado, we're going to camp. And somehow we found a campground that was somewhere in the Rockies. And it was on sort of a mountainous kind of area. And I've got my dome tent. I'm sitting in my dome tent. I have Catcher in the Rye. I'm in my pajamas, which I'm wearing still under these pants because I'm very depressed. So I'm wearing them, and I have a flashlight, and I'm reading Catcher in the Rye. My friends are in a different tent about 20 feet away from me. And all of a sudden, it starts to rain. And it's raining now. And it rains a little bit. And then a rain of biblical... Noah would come back, and he would see this, and he would say, fuck you. Because I don't need it. He would say, I don't need it. And I'm doing the air quotes with I don't need it. But anyway, so there, I'm there, and it's raining, and I'm holding the book up, and I've got a flashlight. It's Catcher in the Rye. I'm in my pajamas, and I didn't realize that you have to seal a tent. Well, now I'm taking on water. And Shelley Winters swam by. I mean, there was a lot of water. There was a lot of water here. Jack Albertson was chasing Shelley Winters on the Lido deck in my tent. There was, but Carol Lindley was there. There was Poseidon Adventure 1, 2, and 3. There was an iceberg. There was iceberg lettuce. Ice Cube was there. Ice Tea was there. Lipton Tea was there. Everything was there. And now it's wet, and I'm waterlogged, and there's like an inch of water now in the tent. Do I get out of the tent? No, because there might be bears. So, you know, I'm a Jew in the wilderness. So now the tent is taking on water, and now something very interesting happens. The tent starts to move. The tent starts to move on its own power. Do I get out of the tent now? No, because there might be a bear. So now the tent comes, and now it's moving, and I'm holding Catcher in the Rye underwater with my pajamas with a flashlight that's still on, and now I'm hydroplaning. I'm actually going slowly down the side of a mountain. And my friends are asleep or having sex or something. I don't know. They're doing what normal human beings do, whatever that is. And so that was my first camping experience. Now, you'd think that that would be enough. Well, it's not enough because we're in Colorado and we're headed to Salem, Oregon. We got to Salem, Oregon, and that's where we decided to split up because they were very tired of sleeping. They were exhausted from the sleeping and the lack of involvement, which is the story of my relationships. We're so tired of not being involved. So at any rate, so now I'm in Salem, Oregon, and we parted ways. Okay, they're going to go their way, I'm going to go my way. What happens next, I can't really even describe. But I met a guy. I've got a backpack. I look like Aqualung. I look like Jethro Tull. I've got long hair. I look like Jesus. Long red beard. Don't know who I am. Don't know who anybody else is, obviously. And so I meet a guy who says, I'm a Vietnam vet. I am on food stamps. And Oregon's the best state for food stamps at this point in time, for some reason. And I would like to take you to lunch with my food stamps. And I'm taking you to say, and I said, how are we going to do that? You don't have to do that. He said, well, no, I'd like to do it. I said, what are we going to do? We're going to go into Safeway. And I'm going to buy food. Are we going to eat it standing up? We could if we wanted to. I do it all the time. And he takes me to Safeway, and he buys me like a sandwich and a carton of milk, which is what people eat, I guess, in the 70s on food stamps. It was like the thing that you would do. What are you eating? I'm eating that. Oh, you're on food stamps? Yeah, come on over to Safeway. So there we are. Now he's buying me food, and he says, you know what? I don't know if you've ever seen Salem, but it's a beautiful town. You know, it is the capital of Oregon. I'd like to take you to the State House, the Capitol building. I said, well, that's great. Should we bring our sandwiches? He said, why don't we finish them here standing up? If I sit down, I get nervous. I don't know who's chasing me. So now we go to the governor's mansion, the place, the Capitol building. And we walk in. I'm not making this up. We walk into the governor's office of Oregon. There's no one in there. And he says, why don't you sit in the chair? And I said, well, I don't think I should do that. He said, no, you really should. And he becomes very forceful because he's having Vietnam flashbacks. And so now I go and I sit in the chair that the governor sits in for the for Oregon. And all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow, this feels really good. A man walks in and it's the governor of Oregon. And I'm not kidding. And he says, I hope that you're comfortable. And of course, what did I say? I make a nice living. So, and anyway, but then we got out and then I slept in the Salvation Army shelter and with men that were cartoon snoring, where the roof goes up and then it comes down, right? It's like, wah! And then the roof goes up and comes down. The only other person that I knew who did that was my grandmother, who was a big lot of problems there. But now I'm going to finish in L.A. because I can't. I have to cut to it because it's going to go on for hours. Now I'm in L.A. and I only know one guy in L.A., a guy whose name is Bruce Tallerman. He was a friend from school. His cousin is a guy named Morton Stevens. Morton Stevens was a big TV, he did scores for TV shows. Did Hawaii Five-0, did Wild Wild West. That's Morton Stevens, a famous guy. And I said, Bruce, I just landed here. I'm on Hollywood Boulevard. He says, okay, I'm going to give you directions. I'm on Hollywood Boulevard. I got my backpack. I get directions from him. I'm going to Paramount. I don't know what I'm doing, okay? I hear a voice. And this is the voice on the street, 8:30 in the morning, Hollywood Boulevard. Excuse me, man. Do you know what time it is? And I look up, and it's Wolfman Jack. And that's the first person I talked to in L.A. And I said, it's 8:30, Wolfman. And I kept walking. I don't know where I was. I must have been waterlogged from Colorado or something. And I go to Morton Stevens. I'm on a soundstage at Paramount, and he's doing a TV movie called The Mannions of America with Kate Mulgrew. I've got names that no one will believe. Kate Mulgrew.
I know that show.
Big fan. He's doing that. And he's scoring the movie. And there's an orchestra on a soundstage. Yeah. There's 65 people playing instruments. And I was so exhausted from my trip that I sat in a chair and I fell asleep. And Morton Stevens says, who's the visitor? And he says, get him out, because he's really bothering my people. Are looking at a guy, they're playing at a very high level, they're looking at a film print, and this guy's asleep. So that was, that's how I landed in Los Angeles.
I know that soundstage on Paramount, because when I first moved here, I got a job as a page, and I would take people through that
Hot AO.
Yeah, very beautiful, actually. I mean, it's really impressive to see somebody scoring a movie or a show.
It's gorgeous. You see, the film is like 1,500 feet high on a big screen, and then you have an actual orchestra.
Right, and then the conductor is very important.
And they're conducting it, but they have a 19-year-old Jew asleep.
And then what are you doing in the governor's chair? I mean, you're just making a mess across the country.
No, I have these things that like happen to me where there's like greatness,
right?
But it's in the wrong way. It's always like if I was a JFK, I'd be like having a sandwich in Dallas and a guy would come into a bathroom and he'd look like Gary Oldman.
Right.
And I'd say, what are you doing here? And he'd say, well, I'm going up to the sixth floor. I'm going to the upstairs. I have business up there. And I'd say, really? The food is not great here. And then 10 minutes later, I'd say, hey, some guy killed the president. And they'd interview me, and I'd say, I don't know. I was having a sandwich in the bathroom.
And they'd say, but you were in the book depository.
Right.
And then you would say, yeah, I don't know.
I don't really know what happened
there.
I was asleep.
Ed, how can this go right by you?
I'm celebrity adjacent.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, no, I'm greatness adjacent. I'm so close.
You have done so many wonderful things, though. But you truly have. Before we get into all your wonderful things.
You've been near so many people who've done wonderful things.
I know, I have been.
Let me ask you this.
You witnessed people doing wonderful things.
Why do Jewish people not camp? Because I've come against this a couple of times in my life.
I think there's a comfort factor, and then I think it's also the inability to put two things together that will stay.
Jewish people don't camp.
We don't build.
Jewish people don't camp because they're smarter than the rest of us. Camping is horrifying.
Even crossing the country, I would think, might be a bit uncomfortable. for you. You did that.
Yeah, I've done a lot of. I mean, I've fed sharks at the bottom of the Bahamas, the ocean in the Bahamas. I've done weird things.
Why did
I'm
you
not,
do that?
I don't feel good doing it.
Why did you?
Because Comedy Central said, "Here's $500. You're 19.
Yeah,
let's do a show about comedians helping people. And the first assignment is go to the Bahamas. Don't get certified because we don't have time. And go swimming, feeding sharks at the bottom of the ocean."
And you did a non-union gig, and you said, "Sure,
of course
well,
you. Well, yeah. you're performers. Of course you do it.
Right. Yeah, we're horse.
No, I hear you. No. I hear you. We're totally horse.
Well, when you're young, you know. I mean, I was. You know, I had dreams.
Do you have any recommendations to people that moved to Los Angeles? I mean, everybody yes. has their own
here's
kind of story.
The, here's
Tell
the
me.
Recommendation.
Tell
the
me.
Recommendation is this. When you move to Los Angeles, you need all the same things that you need wherever you came from.
Okay.
So realize this. If you move for show business, you have to live your life as a person.
First.
Do that.
Right.
Make friends. Move. Get to know the neighborhoods.
Yeah,
get to have
to
a wonderful time. Go to your grocery store.
Know where the
live
library is.
Your life.
Be regular.
Because that's what you're going to live. You
right.
will not live a life as an actor. You will not live a life as a comedian. You will right. not live a life as a postman. Hmm. Live your life as a person.
Regular. And then hopefully these
and
things
then,
will come along.
Then you'll have a community.
And you can build yourself from there.
That will sustain you
right.
through the ups and downs of the work that you have or don't have.
Interesting that you should say that because and you're from Boston, and I've met so many people from Boston out here. There's this big Emerson clique, as you probably know.
My best friend runs Emerson.
But there's a Sean Merrick over there. He went
Jim
to Emerson.
Lane. You know Jim Lane?
But
no.
It
right.
seems that
no need to shout.
Some here. People every
well,
once
fuck
in a
you
while,
then.
Yeah.
Oh,
some
sorry.
People what? Do come out with this idea that I'm going to give it 6 months and we'll just see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, I'll leave.
Right, but what you know
and
what?
They never leave. This is why the traffic is so bad.
But what they don't know is that they have to be a person.
Because there is
yeah.
no
yeah, you're exactly
yet.
Right.
What
that's
are you
great,
doing?
Right, I never thought of it that way. That's an excellent way to put it. It's
what?
Like, you can't give it 6 months. It's not, they think that literally, like, Los Angeles is a studio. Like, I'm just, like, it's a place you go in and there's nothing happening but show business. It's like, people are just wandering the streets, being normal.
There's
like
only
said.
One thing that can sustain you through all of whatever happens to you in show business or any other field.
Yeah.
Community.
Well, what
yeah.
happens though, Ed, I'm just saying
you.
From a Pittsburgh point of view, what happens is folks back there, they think, not just Pittsburgh, but a lot of the outside of 20 miles from Los Angeles.
Yes.
They think if you've been on TV once, you're famous. They think if you've had one good job, you have a good job forever. They think money just comes in and they think that you're just living a different sort of life now. They don't understand that actors and actresses, no matter how big you are, that show's going to end and you still have to go to the grocery store.
Right.
You still have to do laundry. You still have to
right.
take a shower.
Right.
And they forget and they think, so that's what I'm saying, is they're coming from a place where they think it's literally a different type of world out here. It's not different. It's
not
exactly
different.
The same
exactly
as anywhere
same.
Else.
When they call it the Dream Factory, it's literally a factory. It's
yeah,
a factory.
You may be used and you may not. You may be a cog in the wheel today and then you don't work for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't mean anything.
It's goddamn depressing.
It doesn't mean
is
anything.
What it is.
Well, it's very depressing, and I'm glad that I could bring people to a complete halt. We were
no,
going across
we
country and then I killed everyone.
No.
We were ready. We were happy that we were here and we could be thrown out of this studio at any moment.
I
and,
do want to ask
this
you
bus
this.
Station. We could be thrown out of this bus station at any moment.
And you know what? We could do a bus station sketch.
We
and
could.
Who's going to know?
You don't know.
Who's going to know?
By the way, talk
mine.
About, I often do references that the kids don't get. So I like that yours were so obscure that, like, there's 25-year-olds listening to this going, what? Why
yeah.
did they have no
they
idea
They might as well be watching
about.
A Clockwork Orange right now. To them, this is a Clockwork Orange.
So whose Pinto were you in anyway? Was that your Pinto?
Yeah, well, no. It was a driveaway car that was,
oh, was
somebody else's
that
we
it.
Had to deliver.
I remember like a brand new Pinto in the 70s was about $3,500.
Yeah.
Or $3,200.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money, obviously, at
then,
the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they all started exploding.
The rear end, the back started exploding. So you know, you're driving, you don't know how to do a stick, and you're looking over your shoulder.
Oh, that reminded
me. My mother, she had her car was called a Monza. Do you remember that?
M-O-N-Z-A. I have a story about a Monza, a Chevy
and it had
Monza.
Had a goddamn V8 engine
Mazza?
In it.
A Chevy yeah. Mazza?
And it moved
Chevy Mazza.
So freaking fast. No, not Mazda, Monza.
I'm making a joke.
Oh, M-O-N-Z-A.
She's not used to that.
Well, I'm just trying to get through this point. M-O-N-Z-A. And I learned to drive in it as well. I learned to drive a stick. That's
well,
how I learned to drive.
A Monza with my friend Bruce again, who was came to see in L.A. We had a Monza, and the red light was on.
Right.
And it kept flashing. And
right.
we're driving through Connecticut. And they said, what's going on with the red light? He said, oh, it's been doing that for a while. The engine block blew out.
There were some really dangerous cars then.
Yeah. Oh, every car was dangerous. Ralph
Vega?
Nader.
Yeah.
Ralph Nader was walking around. He said, you know, seatbelts are dangerous. He wasn't looking under the hood. They were all dangerous, those cars.
Interesting. The,
yeah.
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 And that's what you're driving across the country.
That's what you're driving across the country, a death wagon.
I just have to say that, that you reminded me when you're talking about the stick that you were, that I buried the lead on my thing, which is when if we first drove out here, I had somehow in the city of Milwaukee, New Yorkers don't learn to drive, but people in Milwaukee usually do. For some reason, I never learned to drive. So I'm in my late 20s. I finally learned to drive, and within a month, I'm driving across the country. And that is how you get to be a very good driver very quickly.
That's right.
Suddenly, you're just like, I got no fog. I'm going 70 miles an hour. I'm going up a mountain. I'm going around a curve.
You have to snap, too.
Yeah,
you have to survive.
You have absolutely no choice
in the fight or flight. The other thing, though, is if you asked people, if you took your friends or whoever you know in show business and you said, why did you come here?
Right.
Why did you come here? What is it that brought you out here? I mean, you forget it. People don't remember why they're here. So there's all these people walking around. It's like, well, I'm working. I'm trying to survive. I'm paying the bills. I'm doing the thing. But what do you love? What do you want to do?
You want to get approval.
I guess.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that people forgot what they love.
People need to remember.
And they need to remember why they came.
Right, but I don't
what
know.
What brought you here?
I mean,
here?
It's because I want to entertain and I want approval. And so even if I have to do a show for free, which I do, I just do that. So I think of it every freaking day. Like I'm
right, but do you want approval or do you actually love to entertain?
I love to entertain, but because I want the approval of entertaining.
Got it.
You know what I mean? It's deeper.
I understand.
Speaking of which, as long as we're going to get deep.
Yeah. Let's go deep.
You were on the Mentally Ill Happy Hour with Paul Gilmartin.
I was.
And that show gets damn serious.
I love the show.
Especially Paul. He's a comedian. And then it gets pretty heavy.
No, I love
and
it.
And you were on that show. And
I loved it.
It did get very serious.
No, I love what he's doing because I'm trying to do the same thing. I have a show called the Self-Help Comedy Hour,
right.
And it's a self-help variety show,
right.
Is what it is.
And we all have a choice in Self-Help Comedy Hours.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
that's your tagline. That's the tagline.
That's right. We all do have a choice. That's right. We know you have a choice. We thank you for listening to this. But the thing about it is I figured out something that is so obvious, but I really learned it. Half my life was self-help, was therapy, and then the other half was performing, right?
Right.
Was comedy. But I never figured out that they really do go together. But real self-help and real comedy, like comedy,
right.
Not the marriage ref.
Right.
I'm talking about like humor,
wow.
Humor and emotion.
Humor
and so you put comedy and emotion together.
We did it in this. We did all these shows. It just occurred to me. I was writing shows for other people. And I'm like, why don't you just do what you know? Why don't you just do what you've experienced? So we started doing this show where it was like an emotional Who's Line. People would come on and they talk about real life issues. And then I had a therapist on stage with me, but a role play expert, psychodramatist.
Yeah.
And he would sit on stage with me and then there'd be a panel of three comedic actors. And the people would work through their issues guided by the therapist in front of an audience.
So it's serious, but...
It's incredibly serious and incredibly funny.
Funny, right. Because everybody really has the same problems. It all kind of comes down to the same seven or eight problems.
And the emotions are meant to move.
So
it's energy and emotion.
You call it commotion.
Yeah.
I heard
that. Comedy and emotion.
I like that.
We're the company that's beyond help.
What?
That's
what happened to the Humor Me podcast that you had?
I was doing it for a network, and the network stopped being the network, and I was doing about the people who create comedy, the people.
Right.
I talked to Greg Krupsch about depression. I talked to David Cross about stuff, you know. But we talk about real stuff.
So when you went on the Mentally Ill Happy Hour, you got heavy talking about your fear of not being liked.
Yes. Well, everybody has that. But
I guess so.
The thing about the fear. Is that you don't know that it's okay to have fear.
Right.
And you don't know that so you hold on to it.
You think it's
wrong.
You
try to control it.
Right. You think it's wrong rather than just walk right into it. Just walk into it and say, of course I'm afraid.
Well, welcome it. And ask yourself, how afraid could I be?
Right,
could I be more afraid?
Right.
Because when you expand, things go away. But when you contract, they stop.
Then you said that you don't think you feel grateful enough.
Well, I don't feel grateful because I'm so in my head and I'm not present.
But sound grateful.
Well, I arrived here emotionally about 2 minutes ago. I'm here emotional standard time now. But no, I sound grateful. Well, I am, but I'm too busy trying to control everything.
But you have a lot going on.
Yeah. Oh no.
And you take control of this, you know, of making it happen. I think that's beautiful.
Right. But the control is actually you're less of what you're meant to be when you're controlling and you're not in balance. You're trying to push things and move things rather than allow them to come in.
You're walking a very fine line because out here you have to make it happen or nobody's knocking on your door.
But
you're screwed.
Well, that's true. But you know when you make you know when you make it happen? You make it happen when you're present. Like last night we did a show on stage and there were everybody was great, but what was great about them is that they were authentic.
Right.
And when somebody is authentic, it doesn't matter if you're at a bus station. Because when you're authentic, you find the right things for you.
Right.
When you're not, which is what L.A. becomes for people, mm-hmm. is you try to survive. And you do things that are not who you are.
Yeah.
And then you get more work being not who you are.
So you're telling me that my voiceover career doing erotica books is not going to work for me?
It's good. It's a good diversion. It's a pleasant diversion is what I would call it. It's pleasant. It's very pleasant.
Yes, I see.
You have a perfect voice for that.
Well, I you know, it's. I'm not saying that I do, but I do.
Because, you do.
No, there's this whole subsect of erotica audiobooks that some reason I'm good at it. I don't know what's going on.
Now, what can
Sean
you do? Can
Merrick.
You do you talk about this on the show? I don't know.
No, I just started doing it, and I got like three offers in the first week.
Let's hear something. All right, I'll be a donut salesman. And
do you want to hear something from Popping My Husband's Cherry?
Go ahead.
Or maybe something from Strangely Bred about sex with mythic creatures?
Do you have anything called Fiddler in My Pants?
No, I don't know what you have. No, listen, it doesn't matter.
It's
sort of humorous. But
you should bring it.
I don't really care. Here's what I want. We got to wrap this up, I want to play Shotgun Storyworthy. And here's what I really want to ask you.
Oh, yes. God, the pressure
and I know
is on.
This is probably old school for you. But when you did The Sopranos.
Yes.
The first season,
yes.
Richie Aprile's getting out of prison. You were the comedian at the Bada Bing. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened.
And you are the comedian, and so you're saying, hey, you know, tell us how that went down, the shooting of that.
Well, I made friends with David Chase, who's the creator, and the way I made friends with him is he has a development deal, and behind all these doors at Studio City, at Radford Studios, mm-hmm. CBS Radford, were people who were making millions of dollars developing shows for Burlstein Gray management.
Sure.
Okay, so David Chase is one of those guys, and he'd come out of his office, hold his hands in his head, and he just looked like he was going to die. And I started talking to him, and we became friends. And I started talking to him about the Ed Sullivan Show. I don't know why, about love of variety and love of entertainment. He loves comedy. And so I kept making him laugh, and he was like, I can't sell any shows. And then he ended up making this show, and I got a part. And I said, if I ever make a show, I'll bring you in. And so he flew me to New York.
And it was Silver Lane Studios, I think it was.
Silver Cup Studios.
Yeah.
And now you're going on a set. It's the summertime, and you're in a van with people from New York who look like they could kill their parents.
Right.
And you're in a van, and I'm there with Dominic Chianese and Nancy Marchand, like
so
two of the greatest actors
Tony's
in the world.
Tony's mother and
Uncle
Jr.
Jr. Yeah.
And Lou Grant's boss.
And Lou
That's
Grant's
how
boss.
I remember her.
Wow. Mrs.
Pinchon.
Oh, I loved that show. She was also the mayor in The Naked Gun.
Yeah, she's an amazing actress.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you're in a van with them, and you're going out. Well, I did two episodes. One episode was at the nursing home where David Chase's real mother actually passed away.
Wow.
And his real mother was like Livia Soprano.
Ooh.
She really was like that.
Terrible.
And the people he grew up with were mob people. And so I'm at the nursing home, and the nursing home has real people living in the nursing home, mm-hmm. and they are the audience. And I'm supposed to go up as a bad comedian and bomb in front of the audience. And I said, what do you want me to do? And he says, do whatever you want to do. Do your own material. Do whatever you – I don't care. You know, just have fun. I go up there, and it's a really important scene because it's the first time that Nancy Marchand learns that her son is in therapy.
Yeah.
But my scene is tied to hers and Uncle Junior's. And so they're such good actors that every time they started talking, I thought they were having a conversation.
Wow.
So I blew my cue like 100 times.
Because thought they were just talking.
I thought they were talking,
right.
Which is what acting is. Why am I yelling like Alan King now? And why is this guy here?
Acting.
No. Yeah. So anyway, so I'm on stage and I'm doing line. I'm saying there's real people, and he says whatever Ed says, just pick your walker up and start walking out.
Wow.
Just walk out on him. And I'm like, wow, this lady is flying. So apparently somebody got into the Flonase. I'm talking Flonase, and it says, you know, this lady is flying. Lady, I have three words for you, and they are Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I said, picture yourself on a boat at Ellis Island. And I'm like, they should pick a Zapruder from of your salad bar. Hello. And I'm like, just –
That's
free
associate. One lines, right.
People are dying. They're walking out. The cameraman is shaking, and we're having a good time. And it took like 2 days to film that.
Oh, how that great one is that?
But he introduced me to Dominic Chinese. He comes over. He says, Eddie, I want you to meet a few people here. This is Jimmy Gandolfini, rest his soul now. This is Jimmy Gandolfini. Jimmy, it's Eddie Krasny. He's going to be with us. How you doing? What do you say? Eddie, what do you like to eat? Do you like Lorna Doone? Do you like Twix? What do you like to eat? Because we got everything here. What do you like, Lorna Doone? I'm like, this is how they talk on the set. We'll make you a sandwich. They don't give a shit. They'll make you whatever
so
you like here. Lorna
Doone? You must have been so thrilled to be in such an iconic show. I mean, it just never stops. I mean,
no,
what
I was
an
thrilled.
Opportunity that was.
I was thrilled. I was scared. You know, I was so
when
scared.
You were at the Bada Bing, that scene.
Oh.
Was that on stage?
Yeah.
The Bada Bing
was a big stage. Yeah.
And so you're up
Everybody's
there.
Naked. There's naked women.
Strippers are everywhere.
And people who could kill you.
I love the strippers on the show because they were always so casual, and maybe somebody would get their head beat in, or somebody would get clipped in the head, whatever, and then they would kind of go over an interest, and then they go right back to the pole, just keep on moving.
Well, they were strippers.
Yeah,
that's the other thing
they
that was great
job.
About David Chase. They were strippers, and I was very uncomfortable. You know, look, there's a naked woman. You've got 500 people standing around. What do you do? So I'd strike up conversations, and I'd
say
they
didn't wear a robe or something.
No, there's no robe.
No robes.
No, they're filming. And the thing about The Sopranos, it's different than other shows. You know, when you film other shows and the camera cuts, everybody relaxes and you just chatter
it
and
changes,
you talk.
Right.
It changes. Sopranos never changes. When you cut, people are so interested in making a good show.
That's fucking cool.
That they don't
man.
Talk.
That's awesome.
They're like, camera cuts? Okay, what's next? I mean, they are
moving in, moving ahead.
Nancy Marchand is, by the way, at that point, is sick and is dying and is pulling an oxygen tank around the set. She's working 13-hour days. She's on her deathbed, really.
Right.
But she's pulling an oxygen tank because she lives for acting.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're gonna wrap this up in 1 second.
Sure.
But Nancy Marchand, so she did not die. I thought she died suddenly. I mean, were they able to write a timeline out of her?
No, she was sick. She
because
was very
I remember
sick.
Them having to use these scenes that she had. They just kind of cut together a storyline based on what she had already.
What she'd already done.
Taped.
No, she got very sick and progressively worse and worse. Lived in Connecticut and then died at her home there. Yeah.
So they were hoping that they could. She just died a little sooner than, frankly, everyone was expecting.
That's right. But the woman was acting. She, people who are that kind of talent. They can be on their deathbed and be absolutely brilliant.
But Jeff Garlin told me when B. Arthur was on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and she was very old at that point, and he said, looking over, and she's just in the corner, like just all sort of twisted up, and he's like, oh, this is sad. She's not going to be. And they said, action. Boom, fucking like a light went on, like a star, just light
it.
Is coming out of her eyes. She's like, and she's fucking with Larry David, and they go cut, and she turns back into an old
Don
woman.
Don Rickles was like that. Remember, Hannes? There was that special on Don Rickles.
Yeah, the one John Landis made. Yeah,
same.
The minute he was like backstage, and he's like so old, and you're like, this is pathetic. He walks out, and he's like, fuck you.
Game's on.
He's like, go. He's,
Milton Berle, the same way.
Yeah, these
I mean,
guys
he's 90 years
live
old.
To be on stage.
And that is true. That's where the fire is. It's amazing to see a performer like that. And that is what, I suppose, that's what brings you out to California.
Well, hey, with that in mind,
yes,
would you
play.
Like to play a little Shotgun Storyworthy?
I would.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
School days. Okay, I went to school in a yeshiva in Brookline, Massachusetts. We had five periods of Hebrew, five periods of English, and five periods of anguish is what we had. Didn't have a wailing wall, had a complaining wall. And I had a Rabbi Shapiro who would talk to me at the age of six in this manner. Eddie, if you don't cut it out, I'm going to bash your head against the wall, which is nice for a child of six. But it was a Hebrew. It was Hebrew and English subjects, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot about not wanting to be in that school.
Brothers and sisters go there too?
No.
Where did they go?
Well, my sister's an actress. She's a brilliant actress. She lives back east in Boston, and she went to public school. But I went there because of the rioting in the Boston schools.
Oh, at that time?
Yeah.
How interesting. So you really are – what part of Boston, by the way?
Dorchester. Matt Damon territory from Good Will Hunting. You know the house that he drops him off at? Right. I lived in that house.
No.
I did.
No.
Pretty much. You really are greatness adjacent.
Wow.
Just about.
You have no accent whatsoever.
Oh, I could.
If
oh,
you
want to
put it on,
nice.
I heard you say Lorna Doone. I heard that.
Well, come on. Say something.
Well, what about your accent? Oh, for Christ. You know, Edward, let me tell you something. The people here are marvelous. This is a marvelous group. I don't know. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
Hey, listen, the marathon bombing, that was devastating. And have you been to that spot?
I've been to that very spot year after year with my dad. And I don't even know what to say. All that I can think of, and it sounds really, look, it is Rolling Stone magazine. They put the bomber on the cover, okay? Why not Martin Richard? Where's the little boy who holds up the sign that says "No more hurting people"?
Right.
Where's that cover? Where's that picture?
I don't know.
Where's the guy who lost his legs but helped other people? Whereas, they really. And at first, when I heard about it, I thought, "Listen, people, you got to understand. You can put, you can put evil Hitler was on the cover time.
Yeah.
But you know what? I saw the picture.
Maybe wait
and
a little bit.
I'm like, first of all, the Lincoln joke, too soon.
Yeah.
But it's like, it is a glamour shot of that kid.
It's a glamour shot. That's right.
And that is really the problem. It's not a shot of him, like, coming out of the boat or something. It's like,
doesn't have a hood over his head.
I really didn't recognize him, so I could have thought it was a boy band.
Sure.
So it wasn't really fucked up. But I think it's just a desperate plea of a dying print to be like, look at us, look. Look, we exist.
Boston is very similar to Pittsburgh, I think. The people from Boston and Pittsburgh and perhaps Milwaukee, it's very similar.
Yeah.
But Boston is East Coast, right, Hannes?
Boston is finally, you
officially
have reached the East Coast. You can see the Atlantic.
He says, I am Midwest, and you are Midwest,
we are
Hannes.
Upper Midwest.
Okay.
I'm so close to Canada that I sound like, what's her name, the governor of Alaska.
Sarah Palin.
Yeah, that whole accent comes down from Alaska, goes through Canada, and goes into Minnesota and Wisconsin. Oh, yeah.
Where exactly are you from?
I'm from Milwaukee there.
I love Milwaukee.
Oh, Milwaukee's a great town. It's where the bus turns the corner around. It's fantastic.
They paid me in bratwurst. I worked in, a couple of hours away from, not Green Bay, but like down the road where all the dairy barns are.
It's getting hotter and
hotter.
Yeah,
I know. That's pretty much all the rest of. Was it Kohler? Was it a resort?
No, it was a comedy. It was a comedy club. And what happened is you were on a bus, and they had a 40s radio station on, and there were people. And
that was current hits.
That was current
that
hits.
Sounds like a nightmare.
No, it's actually.
No, it was near Green Bay or Milwaukee. Near Green Bay.
Green Bay.
Okay,
but I love Milwaukee.
It was probably in. Yeah, no, Milwaukee. No, it's okay.
You're going to be now. Hannes is very favorite guest.
Yes, finally. Christine doesn't believe me. I always say there's only two things around Milwaukee, the weather and my relatives. Other than that, tremendous town.
It's in fun. It's all in jest, honey.
No, I'm
it's
sure
the
Pittsburgh, I see, I like places like, if I went to Pittsburgh, I bet I could find the greatest restaurant
in the city. Sure you can. Sure
I love middle-sized places that have these great things going on.
I don't mind that either, but day after day and to live there?
This is why you came out here.
That's why I came out here.
That's true.
I mean, you can't get sushi within, in other words, in L.A., if you throw a dead cat in any direction, Ed, am I right? You're going to hit a sushi
in any direction.
Place. I've heard that.
You will eat the dead cat at one of the restaurants.
You guys speaking of dead fish.
You may be eating the dead cat.
Do you know what smelt is?
Yeah, sure I know what smelt is.
Yeah, smelt. They're like
in
these
Pittsburgh,
little fish.
They would have those, but they'd be fried, of course.
No, but smelt literally in the summer will wash up on the beaches of Milwaukee out of Lake Michigan. People go out, they scoop them up, fry them, and eat them.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And that's what we call sushi.
And that's America.
This has been an awful lot of fun driving across America with Ed Krasnick.
I feel we actually could have driven across twice in the time we've taken, but we don't care.
Thank you so much for coming on. We truly appreciate it.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
It's just awesome.
I love it.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. I'd like to thank everybody for helping out the show today, including Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network.
Woo.
Also, Jorge Reyes, Joe Slepsky, and our storyteller tonight, of course, Ed Krasnick. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Black. Burns saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.